Once more under the breach, dear friend.
Yeah, let's close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and...
Jake.
McClure. And I'm now supposed to tell you now that The Personal Wealth Coach is not just a riveting radio program. It's riveting in the sense that if you've ever been riveted, you realize this is painful.
Hot metal going through your skin.
And but it is also the name of an SEC registered investment advisory firm in Salado, Texas, that manages wealth, and it's called the Personal Wealth Coach. And not coincidentally, the two principal advisors at the Personal Wealth Coach in Salado are the two principal rattlers on this for the next 2 hours on this radio program on today, Saturday, April 29th, very, very close to the end of April and very, very close to May Day, May Day, May Day, which is probably quite important.
You shouldn't say that on the radio.
Why?
Because you're not supposed to say that on the radio.
Well, in French, it means help me, help me, help me, and I think that's appropriate for us.
Oh, yes, because we need as much help as we can get.
And you can help us by making a telephone call to 254-773-1400, 254-773-1400, and ask us a question to jar our otherwise somnolent brains into thinking about something that we can talk about.
Right. Sounds good.
Silence. Telephone's not ringing.
Well,
I don't think anybody's going to call.
I'm not calling, that's okay. For sure.
Well, let's see. Did anything happen this week?
Yeah, a few things happened. According to some headlines, the market smashed a new record.
It did?
Yeah, that was a headline that it smashed a record. And it was on that particular day, I think it was up 0.04%.
What record did it smash?
The Dow went up above where it had been in the middle of the week by barely anything.
I started to say the S&P 500 closed out below its record. I wasn't tracking.
So did the Dow for the week. But, you know, it's nice to have a good headline out there occasionally. If we could use some good, I love this word, onomatopoeias. So words that are both a sound and a word in a headline, then you get more readers.
Well,
so
now,
smash and bang are both of those.
Well, the NASDAQ did break a record. It closed above 6,000 for the first time.
There you go.
So that may have been the smashing record that we're talking about.
No, I think the Dow was too, a 23,000 something or another.
Well, the 23,000.
21,000.
But it wasn't a record.
Something. I don't know.
Because it was higher back in beginning of March. It was higher than it is today. And it could get back up there, but who knows? It kind of trended downward on the last day. So that happened. Now, to give you some of the numbers, year to date, the S&P 500 is still up about 6.5%. It was up 1.5% for the week. It was, for a 12-month period, 52 weeks, the S&P 500 is up 15.44%. But bear in mind that last year at this time, it was depressed. And it did go up 1.5%. And the 1.5% this week was attributed by the people who were doing the buying to the fact that we had some really, should I use this? Really, really, really big.
Big.
Earnings.
Yes.
Big league earnings from several corporations that reported for the first quarter earnings. Of course, quietly buried in amongst all the other stuff was the fact that the initial estimate, there's three estimates that come out for the gross domestic product from the BEA, the Bureau of Economic Analysis, which rumor has it is full of bureaucrats.
Oh, it's a bureau. It would have to be.
Well, a bureau is a piece
have to
of
be
furniture.
Bureaucratic.
But anyway, it's one of our favorite bureaus. If I was going to work someplace, I would love to work in the BEA. Anyway. They announced the first estimate of the first quarter's gross domestic product growth in the United States, and it was 0.7%, which was below what was expected and had no noticeable effect on the market because earnings on corporations for the first quarter were up pretty substantially, both year over year, and in many cases, we saw substantial gains in the first quarter alone.
That sounds like a contradiction. It sounds like we got a caller calling in, but it sounds like a contradiction, and we will.
It only rang once. Do I need to call back? Hello, hello. They can't hear me. Hello, hello. Hello. Hello.
Well, it was good. They can't hear us.
Okay, let's try it now. Caller, can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you now. I'm okay. Linda. I'm in Temple, and I have a question, if you could give me some insight. An elderly relative in another part of the state called me and asked me for advice.
Mm-hmm.
His financial advisor, and I'll say it's with either Raymond James, Edward Jones, or Merrill Lynch, that kind of company. I don't want to criticize anybody.
Right.
Advise this relative to take his IRA out of American funds and put them into their firm's fund. And the purpose, stated purpose, if I understood it correctly, was to keep the Labor Department from getting oversight. Said the Labor Department wanted to get oversight or management of pensions, and it was to keep that from happening.
Then that was a fraudulent telephone call and should be reported.
Was it somebody that your friend knew already, or is
yes,
this?
Yes. Already well, had funds, and already they were advisor for.
If you will Google FINRA, FINRA, Financial okay. Industry Regulatory Authority.
Uh-huh.
On Monday, and they have a hotline, and if you would contact them and give them as much in the way of specifics as you can, that person should be put on the rack. And
thumbscrews need to be
and
somewhere,
because that was a fraudulent, false telephone call. And if your mother, is it your mother or your mother-in-law? Your father-in-law is probably an elderly person.
Yes.
And
yes.
There are literally laws against doing exactly what you described. And it is in fact a criminal activity.
Let me kind of give you some background on what it is, because there's been news about something similar to what he was saying he was trying to prevent by moving the money. There's something called the fiduciary rule that was supposed to come out this month in April, but has been postponed till June. And that fiduciary rule is a change in the way regulations are run based on a law that was passed in 2006 that says anyone that gives advice on an IRA needs to be doing it in the sole interest of the client. And that's regulated by the Labor Department. Now, there's no place you can put an IRA that won't be regulated by the Labor Department. It's already regulated by the Labor Department. You can't move it somewhere to get it out of that regulatory authority. And it's like saying, I'm gonna ask you to move your house so that you don't have police protection. The Labor Department's job is to protect the public, to stop people from committing fraud. Now, that's not all they do, but that's the majority of what they do. It's to prevent...
In retirement accounts.
Yeah, in retirement accounts. It's to prevent employers from defrauding employees. And it's to prevent people who have retirement accounts, which are in a lot of ways the thing that allows you to stop working later on. It's to prevent people from defrauding the public in their retirement positions. So we have a lot of skin in the game there, and that we think everybody should be acting in the best interest of their client. But there are a lot of people that do this in their own best interest, in the good interest in a lot of cases of their client. And there's some people that are just scam artists.
And I'll tell you that no matter what company the person was with, and it wasn't Edward Jones because they don't have their own funds. So that would leave a limited number of companies left. American funds, isn't, I'm not saying that American funds are the greatest people in the world. They have some very good funds, and they have consistent conservative management. And once you get into an American fund, after in most cases paying a front load, your father-in-law is in a fund that has among the lowest costs out there. And
the ability to move around inside other American right. funds without paying any significant charges to do so.
And they have gone so far as to create new share classes for IRAs that are even less expensive than they have for other people. So if I were going to name, you know, obviously there's no load fund families, for instance, Vanguard, that people are familiar with that have very, very low costs and no front load. And brokers don't like them, but they don't like to sell them because they don't get paid for it. But American funds, as far as the broker used funds, probably is the most virtuous, most benign of all of the fund families that I can name off the top of my head.
The major
yeah.
fund families, yeah.
You know, and that's not to say that every one of their funds is perfect and the best performer in their category or anything else.
Because no, that's not the case in most of them.
But if you wanted to be conservative and relatively safe and low cost, and matter of fact, if you go to Morningstar.com and you look up the American Funds Group, you will discover that they're gold rated with 5 stars. You don't get any better than that. So the person who was speaking to your father-in-law was, because the person is licensed, they're not ignorant, so they are lying.
They were with knowledge.
They're committing fraud on the telephone.
Lying about what they were doing. Unless they just say, liquidate your entire IRA, pay the taxes on it, and invest it over here so that I don't have to be a fiduciary for you. And that's... particularly with elderly people, that is.
Well, that was still. I have to fraud.
I have to be careful because there's only certain words I'm allowed to say on the air before the censorship bureau gets upset. But this really rubs me the wrong way.
Yeah, and it's your father. Somebody is trying to rip off your father-in-law based on what you've told us.
Now, it could be that the conversation was different and that your father-in-law heard something and interpreted it that way to you. We've all played the game telephone or the game grapevine, where the message that begins on one end of the group turns into something completely different on the other.
On the other hand, I can tell you, until June, the person who was speaking to your father has the ability to earn an upfront commission that can be anywhere from 3 to 5% by
6%
by putting money in. I mean, what he actually earns,
right?
By putting money into mutual funds, and he also probably gets convention points for taking himself and his and the companion of his choice to a 5-star resort once a year
somewhere in a tropical
potentially
or semi-tropical location.
Potentially bonuses each year for selling his company's mutual funds, as opposed to somebody else's mutual funds.
Now, that shouldn't be a surprise. I mean, we've known about the, what is the miracle on what, the Christmas movie? What is it? Miracle on something?
I don't know. Miracle?
I can't even. My brain just lost all the addresses in New York.
Wall Street? No.
No. Where Santa Claus is working at the department store, and he tells the mother of the child, hey, you should go shop at another store to get that item. It's a better price. And it was looked at with great, you know, oh, that was so great that the Santa would do that. But, he, you know, Santas get fired for doing that at department stores.
42nd Street.
42nd Street. Miracle on 42nd Street. And we shouldn't think differently of any sales type situation. If somebody has the opportunity to sell for their company, they're going to get paid more to do it. And if they're
in this case, a lot more.
Yeah. And so it shouldn't be a surprise, but it is a surprise because we tend to think that a financial advisor wants to work for our best interests, because first we think that way when we go to a doctor or an attorney. We don't think that way when we go to a used car salesman. For some reason, dealing with financial advisors, the old...
I used to be a broker for many years, and I can tell you that every year we go to the convention, or we go to the training sessions, and the executives or some salesperson, sales executive would get up and say, If you'll sell our in-house proprietary mutual funds, we're having a contest, and the person who sells this much gets this much of a this many dollars as a bonus. And if you sell that much, you get this other thing. And if you sell a whole bunch, you get a special separate trip to another five-star resort with you and the companion of your choice. And you'll be wined and dined and massaged. And I mean, that's the kind of thing that goes on in brokerage firms. Financial advisors get paid that way. But telling somebody to move their money because of the DOL, is the Department of Labor, is going to do something, particularly an elderly person, like the way that you described,
it's kind of like the
is just out and out fraud,
right? It's kind of like we heard a lot of advertisements about probably about 2 years ago about people in debt problems. So the advertisement would come out, Obama's new plan allows you to do fill in the blank, and the vast majority of those advertisements were false, because there wasn't a plan that Obama had made or anybody else had made that allowed what they were doing to happen. And it's when you can grab an item that has been a headline that most people don't understand, the people that are easiest hurt by this are the elderly, because they may have heard a blurb on Fox News or on MSNBC or seen a headline and are reacting to it, because there's been a lot of negativity from the brokerage community about the fiduciary rule. They talk about how it's going to remove service from people, that people won't be allowed to get good advice because it's not affordable, that a broker can't give that advice. No, that's not the case. You can make a living having investments in an IRA for a sales commission. You just have to tell the client how much you're getting paid. And that tends to turn people off when they hear, whoa, you're getting paid that much? Because I just came and talked to you for 5 minutes and you're moving my money. Why are you getting paid that much? It's disconcerting, to say the least. At least give it the same level of transparency as you see in the real estate world, where a salesperson gets paid their commission and you know what it is. That needs to be across the board. And to say, you know, we're going to move it so that the Labor Department can't control it. Well, the Labor Department isn't going to be making decisions on how that money's invested. They're only going to say, if bad decisions are being made, they're going to punish the person that said make these bad decisions. I hope that helped.
Thank you very much. I had a red flag in my own mind, and I needed it confirmed.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call.
Yes.
All right. The phone number in here is 773-1400. That's 254-773-1400. This is the Personal Wealth Coach, and we have a bunch more stuff to talk about. You were thinking about something to talk about there right as the caller came in. Do you remember what it was?
Mm-hmm.
I was going to play the final Jeopardy music, but it's too easy. You already know the answer.
Well, a couple of things happened this week. Several things happened this week. The only thing that happened that I think the market considered to be important was the earnings going up.
Right. Though there was earnings, a tax plan announced, and
The earnings not only went up more than were expected in a lot of companies, and we'll go over that in a little more detail later, but the guidance from these companies for the first time in a long time was that over the next year they expect increased revenues and increased profits. And we can go into that, but we have a telephone call.
Caller, you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, I had a question. I read this article, and I guess I didn't understand it, and I don't know if it was in my magazine or what, or I was in a waiting room. Anyway, it was about annuity. And it was about I don't know if this was a new type of annuity or just something that they've repackaged or something. But it was a type of annuity that you could immediately buy and then immediately start receiving payments. And I mean, it sounded too good to be true.
That's the original form of annuity. which you buy the annuity and then you start an immediate stream of payments at whatever interest rates the annuity company has set. And, of course, with each payment, you also receive back some of your principal. As a matter of fact, I get advertisements pretty regularly because they haven't figured out that we don't sell stuff. 8% return annuities. And first off, that is just absolutely absurd. Safety in terms of interest rates can be defined easily, and the best definition is whatever a treasury bond is paying, and treasury bonds out to 30 years are in the 3% range. So if somebody says, hey, we'll guarantee you 8%, what that means is there's a very, very high probability that it will blow up and you won't get any money back.
Or you won't get all the money back. You won't get what's promised.
Right. But at some point, the company will go bankrupt if they pay 8%. On the other hand, they could be being misleading because there's different rules for annuities than there are for securities. Securities
right.
have to, theoretically, at least in their published advertisements, have to be fully disclosed, where annuities can say some really interesting things. Annuity companies can say some really interesting things that you have to really be an acrobat to figure out how they set that up.
The way this kind of annuity works, just to throw this in there, you give them a lump sum of money. It's a, let's use a round number, say $1,000. No, we'll say $100,000. That's more reasonable. So you give them $100,000. They say, we're going to pay you a given percentage. Let's call it 4%. So they're going to pay you a 4% a year internal deal on there. But then they're going to give you an income that they say this is the fixed amount you will get. That's called the annuitization period. That is kind of the definition of what an annuity is when it starts paying there. So it's been around for a long time. It's the original form.
But here's the risk.
But what is there a term or a life on the annuity?
Now, once you buy that annuity, the money that you gave them is their money. It isn't your money anymore, and you can't get it back.
You get the stream of income that they promise, and you can set it
for
5 years or, this is what they're promising, is you get 5 years or 10 years or of your entire life, or maybe the life of you and one other person, 10 years for sure, and then maybe for the rest of your life if you live beyond that. There's a lot of different promises that they can give. The idea there is that if you die early, they get to keep that lump sum. And if you live for a while, they're hoping to make internally a greater rate of return on that money than they're paying out.
And here's the real negativity to this. Let's just say, and by the way, we think this is true, that the next financial crisis will occur in about 13 years. Based on history, there's a fairly high probability about 13 years from now we'll have another financial crisis. And we'll react to it badly, and a lot of companies will go under.
Give or take 2 to 5 years.
But here's the key that is really, really important to remember. The cornerstones of the last financial crisis were not banks. They were insurance companies. AIG is the biggest one. It was a holder of many insurance companies. And had the government not stepped in and bought it, it would have gone bankrupt. Now, if you had an annuity where you turned over all of your retirement money to one of the companies that were subordinate to AIG, and they promised to pay you so many $1,000s a year for the rest of your life, and they go bankrupt, you're just one of the unsecured creditors. And you basically, in using an insurance company and buying an immediate annuity for your rest of your life, which is the way these are done, you have said, I'm making a bet with my retirement that one company, which usually, by the way, is a stock company, a company that's traded on the New York Stock Exchange or some stock exchange, that company will remain financially healthy for the next 30 years. And if you look at the number of, basically, if you go back 30 years and look at the look at what would the 30 stocks that were in the Dow Jones Industrial Average, you'll discover that a significant number of them don't exist in any form anymore. They ceased to exist, and that we haven't had insurance companies do that in a long time, but I've been in this business long enough to remember the early 1980s. And in the early 1980s and late 1970s, insurance companies were dropping like flies. And very recently, for example, Executive Life of New York, annuity holders finally got the 30%. They got 30% of what they had invested in the early 1980s. So if you put $100,000 into Executive Life of New York, which you probably never heard of, in 1980, last year you would have gotten $30,000 back. And in between, you're just out of luck. And people don't recognize that as a reality, but it is a reality. And annuities, when you're receiving this, you're in essence buying a bond that you can't sell to anybody from a company. You're putting a lot of money in a bond. A bond will do the same thing, by the way. You buy a bond from a corporation, and it says this is the interest rate we're going to pay you, and they pay you that interest rate. The difference is that if you read the Wall Street Journal or you quote, you contact your broker or something, you'll see that that bond value goes up and down every day with the market. With an annuity, you don't see the value, the internal value of the portfolio go up and down because you're not allowed to see the portfolio. It's a black hole. And we don't like annuities for that reason. There's so much potential turmoil in tax laws, in the economy, in so many different things. And, well, let's put it like this. The Prudential, you've heard of the Prudential, right?
Yes.
The Prudential was 72 hours from bankruptcy in early 2009. The federal government, not the federal government, the TARP money was used to loan them enough money to allow them to buy a small bank from the FDIC over a weekend, so that they became a bank holding company so that the Federal Reserve could loan them money to keep them from going bankrupt on Monday morning. And Dodd-Frank has now made that type of thing illegal.
Basically saying that an investment in an annuity has risk.
Yes.
Oh, very. And it's hidden risk, which is what I don't like.
Well, here's an example of how you can always tell. You don't need us. You can use this. It's an easy way of doing it. If you have the best credit around right now, let's just assume your credit is like 840. This is the top of the credit number, and you go to buy a house, and someone offers you a mortgage that's paying them but charging you 8%. Would you take that today when 3.9 is the average that the mortgage companies are charging?
Right. No.
Okay. So what it says is that they believe that you are a risk, and so do you if you accept that 8%. So if you're trying to get a loan that's going to charge you 8%, and you say, hey, I've got better credit than this, I'm going to go for the lower interest rate. The same's true in the annuity. You should know you're the bank in this case. You're giving money to a company. And if they, in order to get your money, have to pay 8%, you know there's extra risk. That extra risk, if it's guaranteed 8%, the risk is that that company won't be there. And they're assuming that you understand that risk because of the high interest rate. Now, that 8% number is something that old Baldy said here. Do you know what percentage point number that they were saying?
No, they were giving some numbers, and they were recommending, because it had actually – it was like a $100,000 investment.
Yeah. The point is
– it was going to pay you a payment of $500, but now because of situations and the way things have changed – now that same $100,000 purchase would get you a $600 payment.
Okay, six per month?
$600 a month?
Yes, yeah.
All right, okay, that's a 7.2%. Yeah. Now,
that's crazy.
The point is, and it's important, this is something that people don't understand, and were annuities, securities, they'd be required to disclose this. That is a combination of your principal and the interest being returned. So it's not a 7.2% rate of return. But let me – I just quickly Googled and pulled up annuity rates, and Barron's listed the top 50 annuities for 2016, and their average rate was 2.6%. The average interest rate was 2.6%. But at the same time, I get a bunch of advertisements that pop up when I Googled this that were offering 7 and 8% return. In other words, they're going to give you, like you just said, 7.2%.
But some of that's your own money coming back.
But even it at 7.2%, that's about a 5 or 6% interest rate. What it boils down to is we're back into the era of junk bonds.
Yeah.
Junk bonds, Michael Milliken, which you may not remember, was,
from the 1980s.
Hey, guess what? We can pay you a higher interest rate than other people. And they were very popular. They were very, very widely used, and they were the same category as the collateralized mortgage bonds that happened just before the market crash, just before the bond market crash of 2008 and 2009. Annuity companies, in my humble opinion, and this is just my opinion here, are reaching way beyond anything that is possible to give people over the long term.
And this is the clearest we can say.
And you're going to pay for it if you give them money.
Yeah, this is the clearest we can say. The risk associated with this, they're assuming that you're going to die at their estimate. And this is how life insurance companies make their living. It's also the problem that we see with Medicare and Social Security. People are living longer than we expected them to. Well, nobody's complaining on my part, but if there's a company that's promised to give you money until you're dead, or maybe beyond, and you just keep living, and they've promised to give you 7.2%, how old are you?
66.
Okay, you're 66. Let's say you live to 100. That's reasonable. You know, most people have known someone that lives to 100. A lot of people have relatives that have lived to 100. 100 is not at all absurd. That means that you've got 34 years left with a 7.2% withdrawal from that lump sum, whatever it is. That is not historically sustainable, even if you've got an aggressive portfolio. And the annuity company, the life insurance company, has to have a more conservative portfolio. I have to throw one thing in here just to clarify some things, because you clarified later when you were talking about the Prudential, but you didn't mention about AIG. The federal government didn't actually buy AIG. That was hyperbole. The Federal Reserve gave them a loan, and I just wanted to make sure.
No, the federal government actually bought a big chunk of the stock.
No. The Federal Reserve was loaned money by the U.S. Treasury Department. We can talk about that later if you'd like. I think you're confusing it with some of the other banks. Okay.
Anyway, I Googled, and among other things, I got the thing that one of the ads that popped up when I Googled is get 8% annual annuity returns, compare top annuities today. You know, it really boils down to something very simple. If you go out to the bond market and you look at junk bonds, junk bonds are paying around 6%. The worst, most risky long-term junk bonds out there are around 8%. And you've got annuity returns being advertised at 8%, which should probably tell you a whole world about what you need to know.
All right. Thank you very much for the call. And on the AIG front, the federal government took control of AIG based on a loan that they'd given. And that loan, this is one of those areas that is, they use TARP money to grab back and give money, basically buy up the loan from the Federal Reserve on 1/3 of the loan value. And we've got another caller on 773-1400. Caller, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, guys, enjoy the show. There was a Wall Street Journal article about the central bank's assets on Tuesday. I have two questions, and I'll hang up and listen. First one, it says their balance sheet is about $4.5 trillion, but they make $900 billion interest on that. Where does that interest go, and is there any way that they could redirect that to, like, I don't know, paying down the interest or the principal on the debt?
That
second.
Perfect.
Secondly, they say that the currency in circulation has risen to about $1.5 trillion from $800 billion before the crisis, and then Bernanke said that within the next 10 years, it's the demand's going to grow to $2.5 trillion. Where does that money come from? Is that the infamous printing press? I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for the call. All right. This is actually right in line with what we were talking about with AIG. The Federal Reserve made some big loans to AIG in 2008. And those big loans resulted in a net combined gain on those loans of $9.4 billion. The loans were about $140, $150 billion total. When you can net over a short period of time, 3 years or so, about $9 billion, all that went back to the Treasury Department. It's part of the reason why, coming out of the recession, we had revenue coming into the government when taxes were really, really low. Tax revenue had dropped because people's incomes were low. The Federal Reserve's moves in AIG and in a lot of the other areas, Bear Stearns and the sell-off there, a lot of the areas that it was involved in that's not traditionally the area of the central bank, led to a lot of net income, which they had to, according to the rules that were set up, if they're the lender of last resort, they must give the profits of those loans to the federal government. And the federal government recognizes that and looks at it clearly. You can look at the debt ceiling crises where they were using extraordinary measures to continue the government when Congress hadn't raised the debt ceiling, and they were taking larger percentages of the Federal Reserve's profit so that they weren't able to spend all of it in further stimulus, and they were using it for the federal government. They're different entities, but a lot of the profits when it comes to lender of last resort to the Federal Reserve have to go to the federal government.
Well, yeah. And the government, you know, we have a disagreement over a point here. I could read from the Wall Street Journal to clarify our what we were talking about. In Wall Street Journal 2008, it said, under terms hammered out Tuesday night, the Fed will lend up to $85 billion to AIG, and the U.S. government will effectively get a 79.9% equity stake in the insurer. I call that a buyout. When the federal government wound up owning 80% of AIG, I said, okay, they bought them. Technically, what happened was the Federal Reserve loaned them money, but in return for loaning AIG money, AIG handed over 80% of its ownership to the federal government.
It was 80% of the voting rights, and the equity share there is what the issue was. And we can talk about that
anyway,
in more detail later.
But the point is that they unwound that later on and sold it. And they sold it over a period of several years, so AIG is no longer – they actually sold these warrants back off again, back into the open market, which became shares. And AIG is no longer owned by the federal government, but the profit went to the Treasury, which is one of the reasons that the deficit wasn't as bad a couple of years ago as everybody had predicted, is because the Federal Reserve had been busy buying stuff that turned out, particularly mortgage bonds, that turned out to be really pretty good deals. They weren't as bad as everybody thought they were, and the Fed bought them at a tremendous discount. And then when they matured, the Fed took the maturity money and sent it to the Treasury. And they've been doing that for some time, and it's helped quite a lot. But they're trailing off on that right now, which is another interesting factor. We last year we had about $500 billion deficit, and that's in round figures. And that's one of the reasons, by the way, that this tax bill was sort of interesting. The tax proposal was a little bit interesting this year. Does that make sense to you?
The caller's gone.
No, I'm talking to you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, yeah, and we can talk more about
that. It's just a matter of semantics. From my perspective,
right.
$85 billion went to AIG, and the federal government then had 80% of the ownership of AIG, and
right.
I call that a buyout.
What happened, and this is, if you go to the Federal Reserve, New York Fed's webpage, it talks about the actions, and there was an $85 billion loan. That was the first loan in September of 2008. There was a second loan for $25 billion in December, in October. I'm sorry, there was 37.8 maximum, but they only ever loaned $20 billion there. So that was October of 2008. In December of 2009, they did another $25 billion. So altogether, we're talking about $130 billion. And some of that came in as preferred interests, which was, and another chunk of it came as securities borrowing. So the federal government basically borrowed shares for a price, didn't ever own them. They were the first time that the federal government was allowed to really own a company, they used a really different term in TARP to buy General Motors. So they literally owned General Motors. AIG, they had control, but they didn't really own it.
I will acknowledge that you're technically right. It was a loan, but it was a loan that turned control of the equity in the company over to the federal government, which I'd simply buy. And technically, they didn't own AIG because they couldn't legally own AIG.
Exactly. So but, what you're saying, I wanted to be very clear in case an insurance agent got upset and said, hey, this isn't what happened. The concept is correct.
The important point here, and this is the one I wanted to make, is that the major insurance companies in the United States, almost all, and I don't know that all, but almost all of the major insurance companies in the United States were within a week or two. And this is in Ben Bernanke's book, by the way, The Courage to Act. We're within at most a week of bankruptcy in 2008 and 2009, and at some point. And today, annuities are called safe and secure, and you should have them as part of your retirement portfolio, and you can leave them in there for the rest of your life. Once you buy the annuity, it's there. You're good to go forever, and you're totally safe.
Except
in the next financial crisis, the kind of bailout the government did to rescue AIG in the last financial crisis.
It's now illegal.
Is against the law now. Congress has passed a law that says you can't do that kind of thing anymore because there won't ever be another TARP. And we're set up, insurance companies, we're set up with insurance companies for the kind of failure. And I'm not trying to predict another 1929 because I don't think it's going to happen. But we are set up for the 1934 bank failure for the same reasons. Insurance companies are insured by state guarantee funds. They are regulated by the states. Well, so were the banks in the 1920s. And there was just this belief that if you put money in the bank, it was perfectly safe. And about a third of the banks in the United States ultimately failed. And had the federal government not stepped in 1934, we would have had a lot more fail.
This is, you know, I'm in total agreement with what you're saying here. What we don't want you to hear us say is don't get insurance. That's not what we're saying. Everybody should have insurance based on their needs and their risks. But make sure that the underlying business plan of the insurance company makes sense. And you know what I said earlier to that other caller about if they're offering to pay you 7.2%, if they have good credit, they shouldn't need to pay you 7.2% for the money. That's just a clear statement. 7.2% would be a high interest loan, and you wouldn't take that loan if you had good credit. So keep that in mind. If an annuity company says they'll give you 4%, that's a relatively reasonable – that doesn't mean you're not taking any risks, but it's a reasonable offer.
Well, I don't know. Very frankly
– have to know what you're losing
I don't know if 4% is a reasonable offer because Barron says, okay, the best annuities offered out there by stable companies are at 2.6 to 2.9%.
Right.
So if you go to 4%, remember some annuity salesman got – A commission on
that
deal,
that. Yeah.
And they have overhead costs. And if somebody's offering you 4% in an environment where long-term treasuries are paying 3%, there's a risk factor there.
Yeah, and we've got to play some commercials. I think there's more to talk about on this subject. But we've got some commercials we got to play. So if you'd like to join us, the phone number in here is 254-773-1400. This is the Personal Wealth Coach. I'm Jake. This is
Jeff.
And we'll be back on the other side of these commercials.
And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. Telephone number in here is 773-1400. Of course, the area code is 254-773-1400. So now there's a, speaking of annuities, which we don't like, there is an article, an old article in Forbes titled The False Promises of Annuities and Annuity Calculators. It kind of sums it up kind of nicely. Even if you assume that the insurance company that you gave the money to will never go out of business and always be financially healthy from now to the end of time, which I think is a really bad assumption. The article talks about if you gave them $500,000 and they promised you 6%, you get $30,000 a year forever. Okay. The author points out that for the first 15 years, your return on that investment is a negative. When you first put it in there, your return on that investment, if it is an investment, is a negative 100% because you just lost all your money. Can you get the $500,000 back? No. Can you sell it at a profit? No. You might be able to sell it at a loss if the annuity company allows you to.
And here's another example, and people don't often think of it this way, but they think about the lottery a lot. If someone wins the lottery, they have two choices. They can get a lump sum, which is a lot lower value than the value that's advertised for that particular lottery winning. So say it's $100 million is the face value of the lottery. Well, if you take the lump sum, it's like $65 million instead of $100 million. Well, where's the difference in that? Well, the $100 million is an annuity that takes place over 30 years. And they're allowed to do something with that money instead of just giving you a lump sum. So an annuity to pay you over time, people have heard this word, these sets of words before, the time value of money. The annuity is making money on the time value of money, and that you gave them a lump sum and they're giving you some of it back with some interest over time, assuming that they're going to make a better return in however they invest the money, and that you're going to die sooner than you think you will. That's their end of the bargain. If you live longer than they assume you will, then they start having trouble making payments. And if a lot of people live longer, they have a lot of trouble making payments until if enough people live long enough,
they go bankrupt.
And
again, that is the macro problem, and I think it is a serious macro problem. In the case that the article in Forbes cites, the hypothetical couple that bought the $500,000 annuity, are 62 and 64. If they live to less than 85 years of age, they lost money because they won't get $500,000 back. And that's and their heirs get nothing. Now, you can set up an annuity with a reduced return
that gives money to your heirs.
That it guarantees a certain number of years or will pass on to a second named person. An immediate annuity doesn't go to heirs, but
right.
Still you can name a second person.
Right.
The problem is that every time you do that, the return goes down. So these promised returns in the annuities are generally misleading. And if a company was offering bonds and they filed with the Securities and Exchange Commission and they made those kinds of claims, the Securities and Exchange Commission would be marching people off to put them in orange jumpsuits and put them in federal prison.
Pretty silver bracelets that, you know, shine and
glitter.
Right.
So is there a place for insurance? Sure. But the fact that they're advertised as completely safe, no risk.
Guaranteed
higher return than you can get in junk bonds with no risk.
The guarantee is only as good as the entity giving it. It's only as as good as the guarantor. And that's a truism that you'll find anywhere. We're about out of time for this hour. If you would like to contact us off the air or join us for next hour, contacting us off the air, we've got voicemail locally at
254-947-1111. That's 254-947-1111.
And you can reach us toll-free, same voicemail. During the week, we've got real-life people that answer the phone. It's strange, I know, to have real people running around, but toll-free, that's 1-800-914-7526, 800-914-PLAN. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com, and we put out a weekly email newsletter that it's completely done in office, so we're not hiring this out somewhere, and it's really our views on what's going on in the world. If you want to read about our philosophy, you go to that webpage, tpwc.com, and you can listen to podcasts of this program going back. Listen to what we said back at the earlier podcasts in the list. Figure out if we were right. And what you'll find, I think, is that we're not going to make crazy predictions. We're going to look at things and say, what's the reality in history? And, you know, we have a lot of trouble not wrenching our arms out of socket to give ourselves pats on the back, because we're right more often than we're wrong by a large margin. And we're about out of time. So until next hour, this is the Personal Wealth Coach.
Truth. It's not just a word on your Fox News station. News Radio 1400 KTEM AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.